people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
It's a new episode of Shift and Steer. Matt and Brad are in the house, but in the outhouse is Aaron.
Is Aaron.
He's out at the Ferrari Challenge. Remember when we went to that a few years ago?
I do, yeah.
That was fun.
A good time.
And before we get into that, though, I want to tell you that today's show is brought to you by Continental Belts and Geico.
Yeah, and right on. Do you think it's raining up there?
I guarantee you it's raining up there.
It's a little random. Like, we just got a couple days of rain. And as you guys are listening to this, a couple days ago also was Luftgekult. And we were there, and maybe it rained.
Maybe it rained, maybe it didn't. We'll tell you next time.
It gets confusing as to when we record this and when you hear this. But
and to add to the, it don't rain in California, but yeah, it does.
We're both driving convertibles.
Matt and Brad are both driving convertibles. Yeah. So we'll see how that works.
That's all right. I'd never put the top down on anything anyway.
I don't think that McLaren or Mazda will care if, I mean, what isn't it a top down? Isn't it supposed to be a top down?
It's supposed to be top down.
You think if we brought them back soggy, they'd be upset?
Around the corner from your place here, I stopped at the gas station to grab a drink. And then I put it's the convertible hardtop, the fastback hardtop. So it's more like a Targa.
Yeah.
It's like a power Targa. And I opened it. I drove from the gas station here, put it back up. It's like, all right, I'm good.
I'm froze.
Yeah.
I'm froze.
It's like 0.2 miles. Like, that's enough.
You know what?
I did it. Got a picture of it. It was done.
While we're on this subject, something that I just happened to come across on the internet the other day, I got a release. You know,
we can't talk about what you look at on the internet.
I do it in incognito.
Yeah. Log in as Rick. Yeah. You use Rick's account.
I log in as Charles. What do you mean?
Charles. Yeah.
So no, you know, we get stuff from the different car companies, and I got a thing. Hey, check out this video from Bentley, and it was the Bentley Continental has a new Z top convertible top, and the one thing that it had all these graphics about the angles it went at and how the boot was so attractive when it was closed, but the one thing that struck me was that it said it can be lowered at 50 miles an hour, up to 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I thought, isn't that just asking the customer to go, oh, it's 70. They said it could go down while I was driving, and just watching that thing go, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it just sounds like it would be the worst. Hey, Charles, can you turn your phone off, please? Or at least set it over there, because we're getting static from it. Thank you. Perfect. That's all we needed. Yeah, you don't have to turn it off. Just when you set it next to the board, it gives us static. But I just thought that's one of those things where, don't you think they should have like a speed sensor or something? So like above 50, it won't go, because people don't read that stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Anything above 50, it won't work.
I wonder, because, you know, or maybe it's, you know, hey, we get a little, we told you not above 50, Matt, you know, you went 52 and it
poof.
Yeah, so you got to buy a new
shot
roof
off the back. We're going to talk to, our buddy Dave, not Dave, Andrew Davidge, a little bit later in the show. And he has,
about e-bikes, right?
E-bikes.
Yeah.
And, I rode a couple.
Did you ride hard?
Yes, and they're fast, and they're nice, and they're well-built, and they're pretty. And we met up in Venice Beach and went for a little ride. And he and I went out on two different bikes, and then we swapped, and we'll get into all of that in a little bit. But
you never talked that way about my e-bikes.
Pretty neat. I never rode one of yours.
Yeah, oh, maybe you did. Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
We had a guy from Auto Week here, and he did an article on them. But no, that's cool. I love where e-bikes are going, because as you know, I always enjoy.
You were ahead of the game.
Yeah, as always,
before,
a little too ahead.
Before, like, every Bird scooter and Lime scooter, and now there's all kinds of e-bikes that are renting, and there's all these dockable and non-dockable versions. There's, like, all the bikes you can rent from Santa Monica, and they're dockable, and then all the scooters aren't dockable, and now they're everywhere. And
now the scooters just laying on the street.
Yeah, but people are like, oh, maybe I should just buy one. Should I just buy one now and just lock it up? And now it's everywhere. The difference between owning an e-bike like the company that you had versus renting stuff, everything that you rent, especially the scooters, they're all capped out at 15 miles an hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah, any public scooter is 15 miles an hour.
Yeah, all liability.
And then, but if you buy a scooter, you can get them that'll do 25, 28 miles an hour. I did 28 miles an hour on an e-bike the other day. I was like, this is pretty fast.
It is.
Yeah, it's feeling fast. You're going down an alley or something, and you're like, yeah, it's
we had one of ours up to 70 once, and when you're on a bike, well, remember we had the motorcycle tires and everything, so yeah. It was a little more stable, but that was like crazy fast. And we capped ours. We had to cap ours because to sell it as a bicycle, mm-hmm. it has to have pedals and it couldn't exceed 30 miles an hour.
And yeah. So we'll get into that with Andrew a little bit, but he's got some insight. He knows all the rules on all that stuff.
But along electric vehicles, did you hear about that new Volkswagen that they announced?
No.
It's the ID.3 electric vehicle. And if you ask me, do you remember the Pontiac Vibe?
Yeah.
It looks like that.
Unfortunately.
Which is not a good thing, okay, in my opinion. But obviously somebody liked it because these aren't even going to come out till 2020. All they have is prototypes. And they just announced they were going to take pre-orders. Mm-hmm. And now pre-orders. What major car company before your good friend Elon pre-orders? I call this the new world orders. So because car companies would have never done this before, but they took 10,000 pre-orders in 24 hours for these, and they're not even out yet.
Why then? If there's so much demand, why do they need the pre-orders?
Well, because it builds capital. It's free money.
It is free money for Tesla. But if you're Volkswagen, you're saying you can't cover it?
You
know what happened is Volkswagen, Porsche, that whole conglomerate just got hit with Dieselgate. They got hit with a $600 million fee. So now they need all the pre-orders on the electric Volkswagen to cover that nut.
They also announced yesterday that Elon Musk is their new chairman. And no.
No, but he's in charge of their Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's doing their social media.
But no, I mean, you say, why would they do it? Well, hell, what's the difference between no interest money and interest money, even for a big corporation?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if people give them money and they say, hey, we think we might have these out in 2020, I mean, you're way ahead of the game because all your development capital is not tied up in developing that car because you're using it.
Now, technically, in case something goes wrong, all of those deposits should go into an account, should go into an escrow account and be held there. Doesn't mean VW couldn't earn interest on it. Now, I seriously doubt Tesla rolls that way because they need the cash.
Right.
But Volkswagen should put it all in an escrow account, earn interest on it, and then if something happens, they can free it up and keep the interest because it's a lot of money. But look, back in my web development days, we would work for some of the big agencies, and one of the agencies we worked for had a big car account. And we would always argue with them, like, guys, you got to pay your bills. We're a smart company. We're a small company. And they're like, yeah, it's like pretty much, it's not a written down rule, but we don't do anything faster than net 90. And I was like, how do you get by with that? He's like, oh, because the car company pays us like a year behind.
Yeah.
We're collecting last year's account.
You it's know, like waterfall.
Their $300 million account. We're collecting that. And they said, and then they told us, like, by the way, every time we pay somebody like net 90, we keep that cash in the bank for another 90 days and we earn interest on it. To you and I, our bank account's not going to make a difference.
Right.
But if you have a $350 million, I don't know,
Acura account.
Right. Yeah, I see that McLaren out front. Baller.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a good year so far.
Yeah, also you got to give it back next Monday.
or
Friday. they're like, no, we just earn interest on it. Sorry, buddy. I'm like, oh, okay. I'd like to earn interest on them. If you would have paid me on time, I'd like to earn interest on it. But yeah, so on the topic of electric cars, Ford has said that the Bronco that they're coming out with.
Yeah, I saw that.
They're going to have a two-door Bronco and a four-door Bronco, and they may have a large Bronco and a mini Bronco, and they will have hybrid versions, and not necessarily of the large and the mini, but they could, because the new Ford Escape is coming out. I went to the debut of that at the Ford headquarters down here in Irvine. That will have a hybrid version, and that is small, and the Lincoln Corsair in New York Auto Show is based on that. And then the Ford Explorer and the Aviator is going to have a hybrid version, and that will probably be the large Bronco version. So the hybrid platform with a battery and electric motors is already done for the small and the large Ford platform. So they could do it for Bronco, which also kind of says, where are we going to be with this this Mustang-based SUV, hybrid SUV that they're talking about as well, Ford. So everything's electric. Everything's hybrid.
But see, Ford's screwing up. They're not taking pre-orders, man.
They're
working on their own money.
And they could on a Bronco. They could have done it 9 years ago.
And on the Mustang hybrid, too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like they could do it. Broncos, you're right. They could have been taking money for years on those.
Oh, yeah, for years.
You know what? Maybe you and I, just a little something on the side. We say we're Ford. We take pre-orders.
This is what I'm saying. We could start a GoFundMe page and say we're the Ford Bronco pre-order page.
You know, Rick does awesome websites. He can make it look authentic. And if they could do, if Volkswagen can do 10,000 pre-orders in 24 hours, we'd be in and out. Done. We're gone. We're gone with the cash before anybody figures it out. We just gave some crook an idea. He's going,
I'm sure somebody's already working on that.
There's probably a guy who's got a Russian accent who's working on that right now.
Yeah.
You know? So, anyways, but Volkswagen's got the deal going. They've got this VW ID3 EV that looks like a Pontiac Vibe. Looks like they're doing it. 260-mile range, they project, and more details to follow. And I'm going to tell you about something that's kind of weird right now. I'm going to tell you about, think of all the weird things found in cars. I'm not talking about your garden variety petrified French fries or melted crayons. I'm talking live snakes, bizarre trinkets, people that you find in your back seat. The kind of stuff that just makes you wonder about, folks. Another thing that'll make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. Bet you didn't know they're OE in tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also on the majority of BMWs and VWs. See, we just talked about VW. Now Continental is launching the aftermarket multi-V-belt with OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, belts that are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. Continental has an OE series multi-V-belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. Hey, you get enough surprises working on cars and trucks. A belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V Belt, the belt with OE pedigree. Get the full story? Just visit them at oetechnologyseries.com.
Right on. Speaking of hybrids, I've been rolling around in the new Range Rover Sport.
That's right. You said that last week, yeah.
The Range Rover Sport P400E, I believe it is, a plug-in hybrid. And it's beautiful. It's got everything you expect from Range Rover. This red color they sent over is fantastic. The interior is gorgeous. It only gets 31 miles on electric only when you plug it in.
That's it. So you charge the battery up, you're 31 miles in, you're dead.
Yeah. And
wow, that didn't make a lot of sense.
But then the gas engine, you know, you got the gas engine. You're never stranded anywhere. But I couldn't plug it in at home. I don't have it set up. I rent an apartment, whatever. So I can't even get a cable out there. And the guys that deliver it to us are, I don't know, 32 miles away, whatever it is. So they deliver it with no battery.
They deliver it dead.
And I can't plug it in anywhere. And at this point, it's like, what am I going to do? Pull up to a Ralph's and plug it in? So
That's the P400. It's plug-in,
yeah.
And you have to go to 400 places to find a place to plug it in.
So I, I get I'm not the audience for this, but I basically just drove around a Range Rover Sport with a four-cylinder engine all week and carrying around a battery and some extra weight. So,
okay, so no, wait a minute. You're not the market for this. Who is? Because basically when you're saying 31 miles, you're talking about someone who lives within 7 miles of their office.
Yeah, so we've had this discussion quite a bit on CarCast as well, because Adam was shopping for an electric car or hybrid car, but he wanted to just plug it in. He wanted a plug-in hybrid that can get him to work and back.
It's good to be Adam. He's always shopping for something.
And he ended up looking at the BMW i8, and the whole funny story, because you know, he walked in and dressed as he normally dresses in his bright blue shorts and a baseball cap, and the salesman was like,
"You're a GQ model."
Adam's like, "I want to drive the i8." The guy's like, "It's really expensive." And he goes, "Yeah, yeah, I know. I can afford it."
What's the first rule of being a car salesman? Never prejudge anyone.
And Adam goes, "Yeah, I know. I'm aware. I can afford it." The guy goes, "Maybe you'd be more interested in an i3. And Adam was like, "Maybe I'd be more interested in an Audi." And
maybe I'd be interested, yeah, in going somewhere down the street.
And,
yeah.
And he left. But the point was that thing only gets, I don't know, 24 miles or something like that. So, hey, 31 miles. Is Adam the audience? Not quite, because he can, on a charge, he can get to work, but he can't, like, run to the shop and get home with, you know, all
because
on one
it
charge.
Takes the recycle time.
Yeah. And let's say he wanted to use it on EV mode only. He can't really do it.
Now, he was trying to leave quietly so his wife didn't know he left the house.
Right. Right. Mostly because she'd be like, "Why are you waking him up? waking me up while you're leaving the house? Can't you leave quietly?" Anyway, so you know, I'm sure once it's in hybrid mode, it goes on and off and stuff. And it is interesting because similar to the NSX that we drove, I don't like these cars with the new start-stop feature every time you get to the light,
shut
the engine
off. I despise that.
And we had a long discussion with our friend Lake Speed Jr. over at Driven Oil, and he's like, you're really – it's not good for the car. It's just constantly draining the oil out.
Yeah.
It's just like it's not good for the car. And but – I don't like that it has to fire it up every time and then you get going again. But on the electric hybrids like this Range Rover and the NSX, you pull up to the light, it shuts the gas engine down. But when you want to get off the line,
it
leaves it in electric and it gets you moving. Now, I assume in the Range Rover, it does it a little bit more effectively because I never have any charge. But it tries to, like, get it off the line and then fire up the engine. Now, the NSX is much better and smoother with all of that.
Well, and funny story, twice guys thought, they're thinking supercar, clutch.
Yeah.
They thought I stalled it because I pull up,
yeah,
it's running, and then
It shuts off.
It shuts off right as I'm leaving, and it goes into electric mode. And I heard one guy, like, over my shoulder go, "He stalled it." and I'm like, going, and then all of a sudden you hear it go, and they kind of, like, look in bewilderment. But yeah, because you're not used to
that. And that engine you can hear more.
Yes.
In the Range Rover,
yes,
you can't really hear it. That's the whole point. So, look, in typical Land Rover, Range Rover fashion, it's gorgeous. The interior is fantastic. Big panoramic
great lines.
Sunroof, great lines. This one was a great color. The leather, the sound system, everything's fantastic. I got to tell you, though.
Good. Just leave it there.
Yeah. I did not have any luck with this infotainment system. And I just don't get why some of these car companies insist on, like, I guess, building it themselves or who they're using. Like, it used to be bragging rights to have Brembo brakes and Recaro seats, and it still is.
Yeah.
But you can get those on a Ford Focus.
Right.
Right? So now it's, you know, the same company that makes the best brakes in the world for your, I don't know, for your LaFerrari can make it for a Fiesta ST if you want it, right? And that's okay.
Hell, they could make them for one of Aaron's rat rods.
Right?
You know?
I don't know about that. He doesn't like brakes on his cars.
That's true. He doesn't like lug nuts on his car.
He just Fred Flintstones his way to a stoplight.
But infotainment in a vehicle nowadays, it's the heart and soul. People, more more of the new up-and-coming buyers care about that than the performance.
Right, and it has to work.
Yes.
And I couldn't get anything to really work properly. And I'm saying, why not go to a Microsoft or a Google or an Apple and have them start developing it and then brag about it. Go, hey, listen, I'm telling you right now, if Jaguar Land Rover as a company said, we've partnered with an Apple or a Google and they're doing all the infotainment systems, I swear to God, they would sell 20% more vehicles.
Well, I mean,
it is such the downfall of these vehicles as those systems. The cameras are slow and they don't go in reverse all the time. And every time Adam gets in his Jag and he's on the phone with me, it connects with his Bluetooth. And then when he puts it in reverse, it like mutes the call and they won't let him do it. And then I got in this Range Rover and I half the time I would hit buttons, it wasn't working. And, I hook it up. It uses CarPlay, but then it freezes. And I was on the phone several times. I hang up. Somebody hangs up. I know the call's gone. But on the screen, it still has their name, and it says mm-hmm. the call's connected, and it's still counting down. You know, it's adding whatever. It's counting up on the minutes, and I can't end the call.
Well,
I have to unplug the phone. It's just like, it was such a
nightmare. You do understand that is a conspiracy with the carrier, the phone carrier.
Right.
Because people that don't have unlimited minutes, they're still being billed.
This is the newest way to end the call and still charge you for
and
it.
And 1% goes back to Land Rover, see?
Yeah, and things were slow. And CarPlay, somebody sends you a text message. It pops up on the screen. You can hit that flag up on the top, that notification, or read the thing for you. I hear my phone beep. For a text message. Nothing happens.
Yes.
And then something comes up on the screen. And I go and I hit it. And it's like, well, do you want to hear your unread messages? Because you've missed the flag. And I'm like,
exactly.
Just read me the message. And it, I mean, you
I've
get in it.
I've had that happen too. Yeah.
You get in it and it's great. There's three screens in the Range Rovers now. There's your dash with the gauges is a big screen. Right? So the gauges can go. They can move. They can change colors. That's a screen. Then the sound system is a screen, and then below it is all the settings and stuff for the vehicles. And
like right
screen.
Where the dash comes down and meets the center console, yeah.
Yeah, and cool graphics. You see the Range Rover. You can put it in sport mode or dynamic mode and eco mode and off-road mode, and changes all the graphics around, and it's great. And on that screen now, it's digital. It's flat screen. You touch it. It has that auto start-stop button,
mm-hmm.
and
Does it have a disable?
Yeah, so I hit it, disabled it, and then I got to a light, and the engine went off again. I was like, what happened? And it turned itself off. I don't know. The button didn't work or came back, and I was like, what's going on
I look
on
for
here?
The disable the first when I get in a car, and then every time you start the car, you got to do it again.
Yeah, like in Adam's car, we pulled the fuse out.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But in today's cars, though, that fuse might also run like the entertainment system or the...
I think people are starting to figure out that they can sell it with the EPA brake or whatever, for the gas mileage by just putting that fuse on there. Thank God when you pull the fuse out, it puts it into
permanent.
Into that permanent start-stop mode.
I just hate that. It's just... Yeah.
I want to say, like, the first generation Panamera that had that start-stop... It would remember your setting. Mm-hmm. If you turned it off, every time you got in the car and restarted it, it was still off. And I could swear like the Panamera was like the only one that had it first gen. And now they won't do it. But anyway, beautiful SUV. I'm definitely not the audience for...
Well, really quick, while we're on Land Rover,
yeah.
You are the audience, though, for their new Range Rover Astronaut Edition, aren't you? Don't you have a ticket on the Virgin Galactic airship?
Well, not just one. I have a pair.
Okay, good. Good, because do you know that they have a new edition coming out just for those people? 600 prepaid people have paid $250,000 to fly on Virgin Galactic Air. Mm-hmm. And you can only buy one of these Astronaut Editions if you have one of those tickets. So you spend $250 for a ticket in the future to buy. But it says you have to be an astronaut to have one. But when's the first one going to go up that these people are going to get to use their tickets?
Yeah.
Then you can spend another $144,000 and some change.
I was going to guess $150, but
to buy one of these. And You know, when you think back a history and everything, the golden years of, you know, the Apollo missions and all that, and you know, we've seen all the movies about it and everything. Do you know that Chevy used to give our astronauts a 1-year lease on a Chevrolet Corvette for $1 because they wanted them, the fast guys, the rugged guys that go into space and risk their lives driving the Chevy Corvette. I mean, I think, come on, you know, oh, it's not the same sort of thing. You're saying these guys didn't
quite the same.
They didn't go through a rigorous, they went through a rigorous test of their wallet to get into
space.
Right.
I was going to say, it's not a dollar lease, it's $150,000.
Hey, do we have somebody on the phone?
Yeah, let's talk to Andrew.
Let's get him on right now. Yeah, so let's get him on the phone, but do you have something first?
Yeah, before we do that, I'll tell you guys a little bit about Geico. You've heard us say this before. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off the dry cleaning. You pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything.
Thank God. All you
have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Be sure to check out geico.com. All right, Andrew.
Hey, Uber went public today as we're recording this.
Yeah.
And yesterday they had people on strike. And so, you know, you might need your own transportation at some point.
Well, good. We got the guy on the phone for
exactly.
It. We got Andrew from Vintage Electric Bikes. And he and I met up in, how are you, Andrew?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing all right. So Andrew and I got together down in Venice Beach, and he was there with a couple of his bikes, and they're fantastic and they're fun. And we went out for a ride, and we had a good time cruising around. And they're fast. So Andrew, tell us, man, how did you get started in all of this? I mean, You were working on you were riding bikes back when they didn't have a motor, like the rest of us.
Matt was saying you were a mountain biker.
Yeah, I grew up. Well, at first, when I was like probably 5 years old, I just for some reason just couldn't get off bicycles. Right, my parents always tell the story of making my dad take me down to the Harley Davidson dealership so he could read me Harley Davidson catalogs as my bedtime story. But so I was always obsessed with bikes, always obsessed with cars, motorcycles. Started racing BMX for a little bit and riding BMX, and then I got really into racing downhill mountain bikes. On middle school and high school, I was traveling around racing mountain bikes, which was a lot of fun. But, you know, with injuries and all that, sometimes it has to come to an end. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a really awesome metal shop teacher in high school. And we had an awesome metal shop. We had, you know, five or six mills, the full foundry, 15 welding booths. So,
well, wait a minute. Where did you go to high school that they still had a metal shop with that kind of capabilities?
It was in Los Gatos, California.
Wow.
The metal shop had a long history of really awesome metal shop teachers. It did a lot of fundraising around it. So, yeah, I mean, we built everything from go-karts to a Baja truck with the LS motor in it. And, well, I mean, the motor actually, I'm not sure if it's still in it yet, but it was one of my friends. So. But, yeah, we just learned how to build stuff, and it was a lot of fun. So, I also had a passion for design. My dream was to go to the Art Center in Pasadena for transportation automotive design. But I kind of built this bike. And, you know, I originally built it to get around at the racetracks at Laguna Seca and Sears Point, and people kept stopping me, like, hey, where can I get one of these? So I said, hey, maybe I'll start a business. So dropped out of community college at that point, partnered up with a friend of mine, Shea Nyquist, and he was building custom Harleys, and I was building these bikes. You know, even the guy building the first wheels, Brian Hamilton, he's our director of operations now, so it's been kind of a motley crew of guys getting this thing together, but now it's taken on its own. It's kind of taken on its own identity now, and it's a real business.
Good. That sounds great, man. That's what you want.
Matt? Yeah, totally.
Now,
tell us about the bikes that you have in your lineup now.
Yeah, so, you know, we started off making throttle bikes. So, you know, they're basically a really light electric motorcycle. So the customers that are looking to buy this bike, they're thinking about getting a Vespa scooter. They're wanting to commute around their cities. So that's our first bike that started the company off. And right now we have a Scrambler, which is like a badass off-road version. It's all black, has knobby tires, inverted suspension forks made out in Colorado. That bike can get up to a 75-mile range. It's a throttle bike. It has pedals, and you can ride it like a normal bicycle, but when you really want to go fast, you push the throttle, and away you go. Still in the throttle bike line, we have a bike called the Tracker, and that's a little bit more classic. You know, it comes in a graphite blue that may be very similar to the Porsche color, and then it also comes in an Indian-style red. And so those are our two kind of throttle bike lineups. And then, you know, 3 years ago, we rode a lot of the new pedal assist bikes that were coming out on the market. And we're like, wow, this technology is really cool. So we went to the drawing board and we said, it's cool, but it's not fast enough for our brand. The most pedal assist electric bikes are powered by a motor from Bosch. And in Europe, you're only allowed to have 250 watts of power. So we sat down, developed a train to put out 750 watts, but still give you that pedal assist feeling. When you ride our pedal assist bike, it's like riding a bicycle with superpower. You know, there's five different powers on them. If you go level one, like riding a really nice carbon fiber road bike, level five, you know, you're barely moving your feet and you're zipping along at 28 miles an hour. So those are the kind of two bikes that we built.
I got a chance to ride one of each of those.
Okay.
It's like what he's basically describing. There is a throttle version, you know, a thumb throttle, mm-hmm. and you just put your feet on the pedals and you can make it look like you're pedaling for fun.
But it's got a free wheel, so yeah, you can just cruise along.
And you just use the throttle and you ride it, and it's got front and rear brakes on it, and which work great, and the battery's mounted to the frame, but the rest of it is mounted in the hub of the rear wheel, and it seems to be Andrew can speak to it more than I can, but it seems to be far more efficient and better packaging, and that's the throttle bike, and then the pedal assist is exactly what he's describing. Is you pedal, but you don't need to be Lance Armstrong, right? You just start pedaling and it goes, and it's like having bionic legs. Like you would shift gears in it. You can shift power modes and you can shift gears like you would on a 10 speed. And the amount of, depending on the mode, I can just pedal the bike on a flat surface in a straight line with minimal effort. And then I can up the power modes, the same amount of pedal effort. And I'm going 30 miles an hour.
You're like the $6 million
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's like you have bionic legs, which is great. And a neat feature on the bike that he had there was on the pedal assist bike, because the motor is all built into the hub of the rear wheel, the battery sits in the frame where, like a motorcycle engine would be.
Sure.
And the battery has a leather strap on the top, and it's basically one click, and you grab it and it slides right out. It's like popping the hard drive out of a rack, you know, a machine or something like that, or popping a cassette tape out.
Good, because you usually use that analogy of an 8-track, and nobody knows what that is.
What's an 8-track? And it's a great feature because, you would lock up your bike or something like that, but let's say you don't want somebody to damage it or steal it, or let's say you want to store it or whatever. I would even go so far as to say if you had two bikes at home and you just forgot to plug one in, you could probably swap that battery pack and put it on the other one and or whatever. Like, you'd be good to go. It's a really neat
feature. Andrew is trying to get you two bikes to every customer sold.
Two bikes
now.
Every customer.
See, it's like he's tricking that in. Hey, let me ask you, what's the recycle time? If I ride the bike till it goes dead, what's the recycle on the battery? How long do I have to leave it plugged in?
So on our pedal assist bike right now, the Cafe, it's a little bit smaller battery pack. That one fully charges in 2 hours, and then our throttle bikes charge in 2.5 to 4 hours, depending on what size battery you get on that bike.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about prices? What kind of prices are you looking at on these?
Yeah, so our pedal assist commuter bike, the Cafe, that one starts at $3,995, and then they go all the way up to $10,000 for our Scrambler and our Tractor.
You kind of dropped out a little there. Did you say $3,995, and then the top of the line is $10,000?
$7,000.
Okay.
You know, for us, it, you know, there are cheaper electric bikes on the market, but you know, there's a reason you buy a Porsche versus a Honda Civic. You know, and for us, it's the quality, it's the performance that we can get out of these drivetrains with the power we're allowed to have in the United States, and then it's also the service. You know, if you purchase a bike from us, we deliver it to a mobile bike shop or a local bike shop. We take care of all the assembly for you, and then you know, our after service and 2-year warranty. If anything goes wrong with your bike, if you have any questions, you just call in, you talk to us, and we take care of you. So we're really trying to create a premium experience.
And is it a lithium ion battery or what?
Yes, all of our batteries are lithium. There's lithium, nickel, manganese, cobalt. But yes, lithium, you know, you can get up to 1,000 charge cycles out of them. They have about a 3 to 4 year shelf life. And then something that we do as a brand, you know, we've been shipping bikes since 2013. And, you know, our customers are in love with their bike. They don't want to buy a complete new bike. So we do a complete upgrade kit. So a lot of those early bikes, we're now upgrading for those customers, the complete new battery packs and all of our electronics.
Cool.
Yeah, they're actually, the build quality is great. Some of the details and some of the leather wrapped, you know, the grips and some of the accents on the forks and some of them had, you know, one of the ones we rode had suspension, front suspension on it. So there's a handful of options, but I think one of the standout features with these guys as a company is how they handle the service, how they handle their customers, and they're putting together a network of mobile bike maintenance guys and stuff. So if you have an issue with your bike, it's like a
pit crew.
Yeah, they'll come to your house or office or whatever and take care of it, because a lot of these bike shops are kind of not up to speed yet, if you will.
Oh, I know.
How to do this stuff. So it's kind of interesting that you know, there are specialists. These guys are putting together sort of a network of specialists that can take care of these things. It was fun. It was fun to do. I ride the electric scooters all around Venice and stuff all the time, and they're fun because you can go a mile here, you can go a mile there, you can get down to the beach, you can go to a couple of the bars and have to worry about driving, and especially in the summer when traffic gets really busy down there. Mm-hmm. There's kind of scooters everywhere. But they're all kind of pieces of shit and they ride rough and they're not very quick. And believe me, there's a bunch of people that shouldn't be going faster than 15 miles an hour down there. if you want to use it to commute to work and do some stuff and run some errands these things are pretty sweet. And like Andrew was saying, he started off at the racetrack with these things and I can't imagine a better pit bike. These things got a good range on them. They're quick. And if you got to pee at the track, you know what I'm saying?
You got to get to the John, man.
You got
to
go.
And they always put them way at the end.
It's never where you're pitting. It's like it's never close by. You've got to go very far. And you're just looking around for somebody with a golf cart. And you're like, damn it. They're pretty neat, man.
How long have you been doing this, Andrew? When did you start? When did you build your first bike?
We built the first bike in 2012, and we've been shipping bikes since 2013.
That's great. Now, do you make them here in the United States, or what, how's that all? Where do you make them?
So we started off building in the United States, and that's, you know, kind of what the company was founded around. But just with manufacturing these types of vehicles, especially with the lithium batteries, really last year we transferred all of our assembly to Taiwan. You know, with this type of vehicle, customers are outside of the United States. So we're able to ship directly from our factory overseas. The bikes come here, and unfortunately, the quality on the assembly has just gone up tenfold since we've been working with this amazing assembly house in Taiwan. That being said, when we bikes in-house here, we're still going over 100%. We're pulling them out of the boxes. We're riding them. We have a dyno in-house. So, you know, all of the development prototyping is done here, but the final assembly is actually done in Taiwan.
That's awesome. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're good. Check them out. Go to the website and check him out, because he's got some good-looking bikes up there. It's vintageelectricbikes.com.
Cool. Good luck with that, man. I've been in the electric bike business, so I know what you're, you know, what all the things that you face there. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing real well with it, man.
Yeah, we're just trying to sell electric bikes to people who would never think of buying one. That's
exactly
kind of who we're going after.
So yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's been a fun journey.
Some of the other features that we noticed on the bike was like all LED lighting and big headlights and all the kind of stuff like that you can get on there too. So if you're riding at night, or you know, you finish work at the end of the day and you use this as your commuter vehicle, it's you're good to go. Wear a helmet, man. It thinks fast.
Yeah, exactly. And wear a helmet because you don't know who else is on the road.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
Exactly.
So cool. Yeah. Well, you got anything else, Matt?
No, that's good, man. I appreciate you. You calling in, Andrew, and telling us a little bit about this. You guys should definitely check it out. There's some cool bikes out there for sure.
Andrew, thanks for calling in, man. And we'll list your website on our website and in our social media so people can find you.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
That was cool. As you guys know, you know, I love electric bikes, and you know, Matt, you've got to, ride one now, and
yeah,
and you know what a kick in the pants they can be, so that's fun. Hey, couple things before we go away here, couple little things here. One is, did you hear that they had a conference call, you know, an investor call like they do, and Ferrari's CEO was on the line, and he told them that he just dropped a nugget that, like, had not ever been out there before, that, oh, yeah, well, by 2022, we won't be selling motors to Maserati anymore.
Oh, really?
And they said that motley fool, like, put it out there and said, and like, I guess Maserati didn't know, you know? So they're like, yeah, we're not going to sell them to anybody anymore, but, yeah, we're not going to do that for Maserati. By 2021, 2022, yeah, we'll be totally out of supplying motors to them. Yeah. And they're like, what? And like one journalist said, I can't remember who it was, might have been Autoblog or something, they said, maybe the only reason to buy a Maserati, you know, was the...
Yeah, that was pretty much it. It's like, hey, how do you get a really nice Chrysler with a Ferrari engine?
What are they going to put in it now?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's...
They should just put Hellcat engines in them.
Exactly. There you go, man.
Now, that would actually be interesting.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that Gran Turismo.
The new Maserati with a Hemi.
Yeah, yes. I'd be interested in a Gran Turismo with a 707 horsepower Hellcat engine.
Hey, wait a minute. We might be on to something here, man, you know? So speaking of motors, I got one other motor that I ran across that I fell in love with. We've been talking a lot about new cars, a lot about Range Rovers and exotics. But, you know, muscle cars, I love muscle cars.
Yeah.
And if you're building like a pro touring car or, you know, upgrading an old muscle car or something, Don Hardy Race Cars out of Texas. Now, these guys have been around forever. They used to be big pro stock guys in the 60s and 70s. I first learned about them when they were making V8 Vega kits. If you wanted to put a V8 in your Vega, they made everything you needed. And a Vega was a subcompact from Chevrolet, Matt.
Yeah, yeah. What was the normal engine in a Vega?
They were like a four-cylinder called the Iron Duke that was horrible. Huh. It was an aluminum four-cylinder with iron sleeves. And so when the motor wore out, you couldn't do anything with it because it was gone, you know? So, but you didn't have to worry about that because the car usually rusted out before then. So.
Right.
But
problem solved.
Yeah.
We solved the motor issue.
Now, my Vega, it only has 20,000 miles, and most of those have been in the sun and sitting in a garage, so it's, like, perfect. But anyways, getting back to this, most muscle cars and almost all my cars over the years have had big block Chevys in them. And, like, right now I'm building a 69 Camaro.
Are you, though?
I am. And I got that crate 572 for it that I spent a ton of money for, and I'm probably never going to use. Because now Don Hardy has an LS that visually you can make it look like a small block Chevy or a big block Chevy.
Okay.
And he's done this incredible job of reworking it, machining this great thing so it looks like the big block or the small block Chevy valve covers are on it. And then he has a dual quad with the TPIs. So when you put the dual quad air cleaner on, it looks like it's a bone stock Chevy motor. And listen to some of these motors that he has. He has his base one, 376 cubic inch, 550 horsepower LS. Mm-hmm. He calls it his Don Hardy Race Cars Retro Series. You can get the Don Hardy 427 with 621 horsepower. That's a dual carb version or a dual TPI version.
Right.
Then you can move into the 650 horsepower version. Then he has a blower motor, and that is 800 horsepower.
And what kind of supercharger is he using?
He's using the my mind just went blank.
Is it a vintage style, like Roots type?
No,
or it's a twin screw, something modern.
It's a twin screw, new one. It's
like
with the
Edelbrock or Whipple.
It's a Whipple. Thank you. That's it. Just went out of my mind. And it looks awesome.
It's interesting that you say that because we talked to our friends at Holley several times, and Holley now has taken over the LS engine intake option catalog.
Exactly.
Like anything you want, carb, no carb, fuel injected, two carbs, tunnel ram. They've got an intake for everything on the LS.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that you and I have chatted with our friends at Edelbrock a bunch of times, and Edelbrock's really getting into the supercharger business. The new Mustang kit they have, instead of the 2300 TVS, they do the 2650. But they have, I might have mentioned this to you before, they have a modern twin-screw supercharger with the Eaton screws inside, but it's in a billet case to look like.
It's packaged in a 671.
Yeah, in an old Roots.
That I did not know.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And you can get it polished. You can get it in black. And it's sort of a modern version of that. So you wouldn't look at it and go, oh, it's a BDS blower or something like that. But it's that style. And it has the snout and the pulley and the whole thing.
Oh, that's cool.
But those, as you know, the Roots type superchargers, you'd have to run real low compression because it makes boost in the engine. It makes it in the cylinder heads.
Exactly.
These twin screws that are all modern, they make boost in the blower unit, right? So you can run higher compression. The boost is in there, and it's just filling the cylinders as much as possible. So now you can take your LS or whatever engine that it's for, give it a Roots-type supercharger look with the twin-screw technology.
That's really interesting.
And what's kind of badass about it is the problem with the original Roots ones is you've got to run 8, 8.5 to 1.
You've
got no low-end power.
Right. We used to run 8.5 to 1, and then you'd have to machine an O-ring, you know, the cylinder head, so you weren't blowing out gaskets.
It's a lot of internal pressure, right?
Yep.
So now you can build a modern-day 11 to 1 compression,
and have instant power.
And so you've got the naturally aspirated low-end torque and stuff of that engine. And so, you can build a 450 horsepower engine and then put the supercharger on top of it, which is pretty much every modern engine out there. So it is kind of neat. Look that up because I think you'll like the
look.
That'd
be really cool.
And so if you want that look, you want it coming out of the hood and stuff.
Get one of these Don Hardy motors, then put one of those on top with straight cut gears so that you get that whee!
You can do that. It's funny because
that blower howl.
It's funny. Even I think Vortec and Procharger, I think Vortec is doing it now where they've got, they had the straight cut gears like in their Vortec, like A1 series and the T series, and then they all went to quiet gears, and now they're like, if you want the retro gear set, you can get the loud gear set in this car.
I had a buddy growing up, Mark Grimes, and every car he built, I helped him on a lot of his cars. He always did a Pete Jackson gear drive with his straight cut because he really wanted it to work. And that car, you'd hear it screaming coming down like a mile away.
A good straight cut dog box transmission in it as well.
Exactly.
But it always sounded, all that noise? It's all that whining noise.
We'd be down where we cruised on a Friday night and you'd hear that car coming from 5 blocks away. It was cool. But
I forgot what car it was, but it was a great, maybe it was like a Nova or something, Troy Trepanier built, with a big Pro Charger on it. And he's just like, I want like Pro Charger, like F1, whatever, supercharger with straight cut gears. And it showed up at like a Good Guys autocross event.
Yeah.
And it's just sitting there. It's like, yeah. It's not even moving. It's just idling. It's like, what is that? And you're like, oh, that's the big Pro Charger. And that
exactly.
Thing.
That's
and
so
then,
cool.
Yeah. And idle just screaming at those gears, man. It's fantastic.
All right. We got to wrap this
up.
Yeah.
I got stuff to do.
Yeah.
It's not podcasting.
We're the top of the hour. Hey, Matt, where can they find us online?
Check us out at shiftandsteer.com. Brad's got some photo galleries and stuff up there. Some of the cars we've been driven. We'll throw the Range Rover up there as well. And all of our social media, Shift Steer Media. And you can follow me at Motorator.
You can follow me at Bradley_Fanshawe on Instagram, which is probably the best. But you can also find me on Twitter and on Facebook at Brad Fanshawe. Go there, check it out. And
next week we'll get an update from Aaron how the Ferrari challenge was.
Yeah, and you'll we'll tell more about Luftgekult.
That's right. We'll talk about Luft, and we'll see if Aaron talked his way into riding shotgun in one of those Ferraris.
And you'll also hear if we got soaked in our convertibles. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shift and Steer.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.